I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten, and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it.
What I find, Andrea, is what everybody wants is to stop feeling like an imposter, right? They want to read a book and at the end, like, oh, okay, done, got that, you know, or go to a workshop or a talk and walk in feeling like an imposter and leave not feeling like an imposter, right? And that's not how it works. The feelings are the last change. So my really mantra is the only way to stop feeling like an imposter is to stop thinking like an imposter.
You're listening to Make Some Noise Podcast, episode number 573 with guest Valerie Young. Welcome to Make Some Noise Podcast, your guide for strategies, tools, and insight to empower yourself. I'm your host, Andrea Owen, global speaker, entrepreneur, life coach since 2007, and author of 3 books that have been translated into 18 languages and are available in 22 countries. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a lesson that will help you maximize unshakable confidence, master resilience, and make some noise in your life. You ready? Let's go. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Happy New Year. It's the first podcast episode of the year, and I'm so excited, and I feel slightly guilty that I don't have like a New Year, New You podcast episode for you. But if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, you know that that's usually not what I do. Sometimes I put out an episode where I interview somebody who's really good at goal setting and things like that. And I didn't this year. I am focusing on getting guests on that you request. I'm still catching up from last year. I think I've about caught up with all of the topics that you, my listeners, requested. And today is no exception. We have a guest on who is an expert, and literally like started an institute around the imposter complex. Valerie Young is here, and I'm excited to finally interview her for the show. I realized, you know, when I saw the request come through for imposter complex, I was like, oh, I've had somebody on about that, and realized it was Tanya Geisler, and it was, I think, episode 37, which was, it was a minute ago, 10 years ago to be exact. So anyway, it was time to have somebody on, and I'm excited to dive into this topic. She has some really great information and tips. And before we do that, since it's a new year, I just wanted to let you know that I have one opening for coaching. If anybody feels like they need support with their goals in 2024, or if you're listening to this in the future, maybe it's already spring or something like that. But typically I help women who are, you know, they've got a lot going on in their life, whether it's their career. I have coached some women that don't work outside of the home, but just they are leaders in some sort of their life, whether it's at the home, work, sometimes both. And they have got a lot of the boxes checked off. There's a few things that they're just struggling with. Sometimes it is having hard conversations and setting boundaries. Sometimes it's getting to the bottom of like kind of why they feel like shit, but it's not depression. They just want to feel more fulfilled. And that would be values work. And then sometimes it's mindset stuff, just confidence and that not knowing the skill set to be able to get to that next level in your life and also carrying those skills with you. The goal is not so that we do the things that you want to do together during our time together. And then that's it. And then once you're on your own, you're back to your old habits. The goal is for you to learn new strategies, tools, ways of being, ways of thinking, ways of behaving, so that you can carry it with you. If that happens, I'm doing my job well. So anyway, AndreaOwen.com/links. And in that list of things, you will see a button to fill out an application or go to the coaching page to read more about it. All right, let me tell you a little bit about today's guest. Dr. Valerie Young is the leading thought leader on imposter syndrome and co-founder of Imposter Syndrome Institute. Valerie's work has been cited all around the world, including in Time Magazine, Newsweek, The New York Times, Psychology Today, Science, The Wall Street Journal, O Magazine, and many more. Valerie is author of the award-winning book, The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women and Men, Why Capable People Suffer from the Imposter Syndrome and How They Thrive in Spite of It, with Random House, and is now available in 6 languages. So without further ado, here is Dr. Valerie. Dr. Valerie, thank you so much for being here.
I'm thrilled to be here.
I just realized that I haven't had anybody on to talk about imposter syndrome since it was under my first 30 episodes. I thought it had been more recent, and I did a listener survey earlier this year in 2023, and one of the topics was people said, can you have someone on to talk about imposter syndrome? And I said, well, what better person to have on than you? I think I mentioned this in my invite emailed over, it might've gone to your team, but I quoted you in my second book, How to Stop Feeling Like Shit. Thank you for coming on. Can we start? I'm assuming that most of my listeners know what imposter syndrome is, but so many people, when they hear about it for the first time, say, I didn't know it had a name. So for people listening who might not be clear, can you start by just telling us, what is it? What does it look like in real life?
Sure, absolutely. And thank you. Thank you for having me, Andrea. Imposter syndrome often gets confused as kind of a fancy term for low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. When they are different, I always tell people, think of self-esteem as this kind of global sense we have about ourselves. But imposter feelings are very specific to achievement arenas, work, school, career, job, business. You don't feel like an imposter when you're walking the dog or, you know, emptying the dishwasher. You might in a meeting with people more senior than you or have a very different skill set than you. Or if you're going on a job interview or you're meeting with a big client, you know, experiences like that or getting constructive feedback. The term imposter phenomena, which is the original terminology, was coined by Dr. Pauline Clance and Dr. Suzanne Imes, two clinical psychologists, in a journal article in 1978. I just want to kind of flag the term syndrome. It very quickly morphed into being called imposter syndrome, really within like 4 years of their paper coming out. And I don't think it was, including by myself, and I don't think it was because we were now pathologizing it. I think it's because there are two definitions of syndrome. One is the more clinical kind of mental health understanding of it. But the other one, you know, is really comes out of the dictionary, which is most people's frame of reference, which is a set of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that constitute a pattern. And that's how I use the term syndrome, not to diagnose anyone. You should never be running around diagnosing people. You know, with that said, basically what it refers to is this belief that deep down, we're really not as intelligent, capable, competent, qualified, talented as other people seem to think that we are. And we have these feelings despite concrete evidence of our actual accomplishments or abilities. So the question is, if you can see the degree on the wall, you can hear your performance review, you can see you landed the big client or the book deal, what's happening? Well, those of us with imposter feelings have become very adept at essentially saying, well, sure, I did it, but I can explain all that. So in other words, we externalize our accomplishments. We say, well, they said they love my podcast, but that's just because they like me, or I was lucky, or timing, I had a good connection. And ultimately, you know, central to imposter syndrome, Andrea, is this fear of being found out.
Yes. And I have found that it can be a little insidious. And what I mean by that is a sort of covert, because for the longest time, I didn't think that I really struggled with it. And then I was writing my second book, and I remember thinking, and probably saying out loud to people, oh, now I feel like a success, because I truly believe my first book was a fluke. Like, it just was like this accident. And, you know, and then, okay, the second time, like, now I can count myself and see myself as quote unquote successful. So do you see that that happens sometimes?
In the music world, you talk about kind of one hit wonders, right? Or yeah. If your book is a bestseller right out of the gate, or you get some kind of acclaim, sometimes there's this fear, like, I don't know how I did it the first time.
Mm-hmm. Surely it couldn't have been my talent.
Right. How could I possibly replicate that initial success? When I was a doctoral student, I wrote this paper on white racism that ended up being used on multiple college campuses. I didn't write for probably 2 years after that. Mm. Because I had no idea how that even happened, right? So yeah. How could I like repeat that?
One of the things I find so interesting about your work is, and there's a really great infographic, I'll link to it in the show notes, is you talk about the imposter syndrome coping mechanisms, and there are seven of them. I think it helps people identify the behaviors that they do to try to kind of cope with or cover up their feelings of imposter syndrome. Can you talk about some of those?
Yeah, and truly credit for that conceptualization goes to Clance and Imes. They identify different, they call them coping and protecting mechanisms. And these are unconscious ways that, you know, something in us has kind of kicked in to help us do two things. One, manage the anxiety of waiting to be found out, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And the other one is to actually avoid being found out, protect us from being discovered. So they identify things like holding back. I call it flying under the radar. So that's the person who maybe doesn't ask questions in meetings or class, doesn't go for more challenging opportunities or assignments, doesn't start their business, doesn't scale their business. You know, if I can kind of keep my head down, do my work, play it safe, they won't find out. On the other end of that continuum is people who overwork, overprepare for everything. And I don't mean here like good old fashioned hard work, but this sense that the only reason I'm successful is that I have to work harder than everyone else to kind of cover up for my supposed ineptness. Years ago, I was on a talk show in Boston to talk about imposter syndrome. And there was a medical student there, Karen Brown from BU, Boston University. And the host said, Karen, this is ridiculous. Clearly, you're intelligent. You're a medical student. She said, no, not really. I just work harder than the other students. For someone else, it might be kind of chronically procrastinating on important things. And this is one I always want to be clear about because we all procrastinate. I think we're hardwired to avoid things that are big, hard, difficult, where to start, or they're not very fun. Where it matters is when it can undermine achieving our major work or life objectives. So very quick example, young woman wanted this very prestigious internship when she was at university. To get it, she had to complete a very heady application process, a lot of steps, had 6 months to do it. Let's say, you know, November 3rd, when do you think she starts it? November 2nd, right? She gets it in on time, but she doesn't get the internship. How procrastination protects us is we can say to ourselves, well, I'm disappointed, but I'm hardly surprised because I know it didn't reflect my best effort. The rub is if she had been successful, she probably wouldn't have felt deserving. Mm-hmm. And there's others like never starting or finishing, various forms of self-sabotage, kind of choosing an occupation with kind of a low profile, ever-changing profile, kind of job hopping, thinking, okay, now I've been here a couple of years, the no talent police are going to be on me pretty soon or move on.
The gig is up.
Yeah. And these are all ways, you know, the thing I want to impress upon people is we're doing the best we can. On an unconscious level, we are trying to take care of ourselves. So I want people to appreciate their pattern and to really dig a little deeper and ask, like, what does this pattern help me avoid? What does it protect me from? And what does it help me get? Because we get something out of these patterns.
It sounds like all of these seven coping mechanisms are normal human behavior. But I just want to emphasize what you're saying is, are you using them in a way to kind of undermine yourself and your success?
Well, it's more than using them in a way to protect yourself.
Okay.
See, here's the thing. So on the one hand, you want to look at how does my pattern serve me? Because if you weren't getting something out of it, Andrea, you would have given it up a long time ago. Once you understand what you're getting out of it, you know, it helps me avoid scrutiny or humiliation or disappointment or failure. If I procrastinate, guess what? I get time to do stuff I'd rather do. If I work like ridiculously hard, I'm probably going to be successful. So there's something in it. The important thing, and this is based on the work of Gerald Weinstein, long now since retired professor at UMass Amherst, where I went. The next step of that kind of pattern awareness process is to then say, okay, this is what I get, but you never get something for nothing, is what Jerry would say. Mm-hmm. Then you ask yourself, what if I never you know, what if I just always continue this pattern? What would the price be? What opportunities and experiences might I miss out on? Like, what is the cost? What will happen if I never change it? Once you understand, here's what I get, here's the price I pay, now you can make a conscious decision. Yeah. You might say, you know what? I'm going to keep my lousy pattern. It's working for me.
Nice.
I'm not giving it up. Or you say the price is too high, and then you can make some shifts.
As someone who got sober 12 years ago, there's some direct correlations with that kind of thinking. So it's so fascinating. Can you, I am the one of the seven coping mechanisms I want to ask you about, because I'm not super clear on this one and I have a suspicion it might be one that I use. It's number three, the use of charm and perceptiveness. What is that one?
That's what Clance and I identified that one. They identified, I think, four of them, and I added the other three. Basically, they were working a lot with graduate students and medical students and folks on college campuses. And they would find, in some cases, they would kind of psych out their professors and kind of figure out how they wanted their work done, or kind of gear their work to their professors, kind of pet projects, mm-hmm. and then ask themselves, if they really knew what I wanted to do, would they think I was so great? Or they would use like humor, you know, and charm, and then kind of, you know, if only the right person would notice my brilliance, right? So they would dazzle them with their personality. Once the person noticed them, they're like, well, what do they know? Right? Mm-hmm. It's like, then you dismiss them because you don't believe them, because you think it's only because they like me.
Guilty.
You know, when I would go meet with my faculty advisor when I was a graduate student, he was a funny guy. I would never go in there without a joke or a funny story. You know, if I could just keep them laughing, we don't have to talk about my research.
Right. We don't have to talk about the actual work. We need to take an ad break, but when we come back, speaking of research, I want to talk about research and what it shows with women's competence in the workplace. We'll be right back. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise. There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. All right. Can you tell us what the research shows in terms of the competence of women in the workplace?
Well, one thing I can say, there's a book called like, Why Are All the Incompetent Leaders Men?
Thank
you. And there's a wonderful TED talk. The guy's an Argentinian researcher, and mm-hmm. he's at Oxford and Harvard. Very engaging. So the research shows that everyone overestimates their abilities. Like, how do you think you're going to do on this exam kind of thing?
Okay.
But men over-exaggerate theirs 30% more often and higher than women do. And women tend to underestimate their success and their competence. I'm generalizing.
Their abilities. Yeah. Oh, gosh. That's a whole nother conversation for another podcast. I know in your book, you talk about rethinking risk-taking and cultivating chutzpah, which I never feel like I pronounced that correctly. Can you talk about that a little bit?
There's a perception that women are not risk takers. And I kind of invited readers to rethink that. I think having children is pretty darn risky, right?
Sure.
Putting all your eggs in one basket. You know, historically, women relied on a man to provide. And let's hope he sticks with you for the rest of your life. Otherwise, you're screwed. Women take more risks in emotional realms, in vulnerability and sharing in ways that might be terrifying to some men. You know, they might be a little more risk averse around finances, but I think it's partly a survival kind of thing. But I do think that we can and should stretch our risk taking muscles a little bit.
Yeah.
So I did have a chapter on chutzpah, which is just a lovely, you know, Yiddish term.
Yes. Thank you for pronouncing it correctly.
Well, you know, I think I am. I am not 100%. Sure. But, you know, I was walking my dog thinking of the story this morning for some reason. I can't remember her name, but there was a woman who had written a children's book and she was trying to get get into a bookstore to do a reading. And people would say, well, you know, have your agent call me. So she turned herself into like Holly Smith agent, right? She would call and book these things. It was the same person. Mm-hmm. And she had all these, every time she called a bookstore, she learned something new about how to get in. And so she would apply it. So anyway, she's Holly Smith, and she finally gets this big book signing, and there's a line outside, and they're all coming in, and the person who brought her in said, you know, something like, wow, you sound so much like Holly. And she said, yeah, people say we look a lot alike too. You know, and Steven Spielberg, there was this, you know, famous story about how when he was a young kid, he went on a tour of the studios in Hollywood on the little tram. He kind of hopped off at a rest stop, didn't get back on, mm-hmm. introduced himself to somebody there, said, I've got some movies I'd love to show you. And, oh, sure, kid, come back anytime, right? So he shows the guy to stop. The guy's encouraging, but, you know, he's a young kid, so that's it. Well, he just shows up one day with a briefcase with a sandwich in it, nothing else. Walks into an empty office, sets up his office, puts his name in little white letters out on the board in the hall, right? He became a squatter, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a lot easier to kind of make connections if people think you're already on the inside.
Yeah, if you belong there. That's so interesting. The whole conversation around risk-taking is fascinating. And I've seen some research that points to small children and the way that, you know, it's gender specific in the way that little boys are from toddler age, little boys are treated versus little girls and little boys in their rough housing, they're encouraged to take risks even at that age. And that kind of social conditioning matters as we grow up. By no means I'm an expert on this, but I also think that some of it comes down to personality. I think I'm lucky in that regard, in that I was both born with the personality of high risk. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, my ADHD and just, let me tell you, like, high risk is not great around drugs and alcohol, everyone. Like, I don't recommend it. However, and another thing, one of the pieces of advice my dad gave me at such a young age, I grew up on the tennis court. Both my parents were avid tennis players. And my dad would always tell me when he was teaching me how to play tennis is, always rush the net, always rush the net. Mm. And what he would tell me is it's not just about your confidence in, because it's a vulnerable position and when you're playing singles in tennis to be at the net. However, it's intimidating to your opponent. And that's what he told me. And in life as well. And I learned that I'm lucky I learned that at such a young age, because when I was younger, I was a little bit more shy, but I've taken that advice with me. And when I'm, you know, hovering over the keyboard about to email someone or take some, whatever kind of risk it is, I hear my dad saying like, rush the net, kiddo, just rush the net. I say all that for my listeners, you know, it's never too late to learn how to rush the net. It's never too late to learn how to take risks. It's just flexing the muscle and practicing, because sometimes you're going to fall on your face.
Absolutely. And it's like, what's the worst that can happen? You don't win the game. That's not right. The end of the world. There's going to be another game.
You'll survive it. And that's how you build resilience.
I'm really glad you brought that up, Andrew, because I think sports offer, a wonderful analogy. Mm-hmm. The reality is every game, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to be crying on the bench.
Yep.
The team that's crying on the bench, they don't hang their uniform up and go home, right? Which is what happens often with young people in STEM. They just kind of drop out when they flunk one course. I guess I'm not qualified. Or their business doesn't make a profit in the first month. Oh, I guess I'm not successful. Mm-hmm. And, they go watch the game tape. They figure out what they could do differently. They practice more. They get more coaching. And they say, let's get them again. I do want to comment. I do think socialization does matter. I'm sure my niece will not hear this, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. But I watched her husband with my niece when she was like 3. He was constantly saying, be careful, little girl. Be careful, little girl. Like if she was running in the living room, the message was constantly danger, danger, be careful. Mm-hmm. And now she is so tentative as a 5-year-old, like, oh, I don't want to walk across the scary rocks, Mm-hmm. And I really wonder how much that got instilled.
At least somewhat, I'm sure. I want to circle back to one thing I think that you commonly probably hear in the work that you do, and that, because some people say that imposter syndrome is actually a good thing. So do you agree with any part of that?
I do not. Okay. And let me tell you why.
I was hoping you would say that. Please expand. I honestly didn't know what you were going to say.
It's funny because these different narratives all popped up around 2011. And that was one I kind of dug into to like, where is this coming from? Because it's great TED Talks from this lovely entrepreneur, this guy from Australia who talked about it.
Of course it was a man.
Good thing. Adam Grant has it in his book. It's a good thing. Seth Godin, marketing guru, he says, don't you dare try to get rid of your imposter syndrome. So Godin would say you need it for creativity. Adam Grant would say it motivates us to work harder and it keeps us humble. So mm-hmm. those are the main reasons I hear. I look at it like, it means we're learning. So first of all, are we saying that you have to feel inadequate to be learning and to be creative? I don't think so, personally.
I don't either.
This idea, the humility thing, I think that does work for some men for whom hubris is more of an issue, they do need to probably work at tamping it down. Mm-hmm. In 40 years, I have never heard one woman, Andrea, not one woman say, I think I'm going to keep my self-doubt because it keeps me humble.
Yeah.
I've never heard that. So I don't think that's an issue. The other one is this idea that it motivates us to work harder. A lot of respect for Adam Grant, but in his book, he says it motivates us to work harder. He said it may not help if you're like trying to decide to get into the race, but once you're in the race, it helps. Well, guess what? A lot of people aren't getting in the race because of imposter syndrome. They're not starting their businesses, scaling their businesses, going to school, going for promotion. So let's not leave them out. But even then, he's got a little asterisk and he's got a footnote, and it's in like 7-point type that says, basically, by the way, the research shows women are less propelled by self-doubt. It may motivate men. So if that works for you, great. But I would say, can we find a healthier motivation for working harder other than trying to outrun the imposter patrol? And importantly, I think it's a false choice. This idea that you could be an arrogant jerk who's kind of dialing it in, who's not creative, or you can feel like an imposter. That's what we're presented with, either or. And I think there's a third choice, a healthier choice, and that is to become what I refer to as a humble realist. Mm-hmm. Somebody who is genuinely humble, but has never had imposter feelings. And it's not because they're more competent. It's because they have a realistic understanding of what it means to be competent. They have a healthy response to failure, mistakes, constructive feedback, which, let's face it, it feels like criticism to us.
Yeah.
And they understand that a certain amount of fear and self-doubt are part of the achievement journey, which means they're not expecting themselves to feel confident 24/7.
Yeah, it sounds like, that last part is mixed in some emotional intelligence there. What you were saying reminds me of, the whole concept of that imposter syndrome, kind of propels you to be more successful, productive, et cetera. It reminds me of when people say, you can say shame changes people's behavior. It works. It will change behavior on a dime. But in the long run, it's destructive. It's incredibly destructive to people, exactly, to relationships, to yourself. It's like, so on from every angle. And I cannot believe it was a footnote. Like, it deserved an entire like subsection in the chapter, just looking at the research between men and women and how imposter syndrome differs there.
Yeah. And I think it's also based on this false premise that imposter syndrome primarily affects high achievers. Mm-hmm. And I think it affects people who could do more.
Yeah.
If they chose to, were it not for nagging self-doubt.
We probably should take another break before I get into my next question. So we'll be right back.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Okay, I would love to not just talk about the problem, but can we talk about solution? And I'm gonna quote from your website. It says, imposter syndrome demands immediately usable solutions. The goal is not to fix anyone, rather it's to provide the information, insight, and tools needed to effectively address normal imposter feelings and help those understand the signs of imposter phenomenon. Importantly, these same tools can be applied at both the employee and organizational level. So can you, that's where I would love for you to talk about a little bit is work, because I'm assuming people are listening to this and thinking, that's great, but can you tell all this to my boss? Because they're kind of they built the workplace that makes me feel like an imposter. Like, what is your take on that?
I think workplace culture can play a role in fueling self-doubt. I think there are certain industries and sectors on a larger level, like academia, which is a culture of critique, medicine, which is a culture of shaming, especially with medical students and residents, which are overarching. It wouldn't matter what workplace you went to, the overarching culture, you know, feeds into and fuels imposter syndrome. But I don't think it is the core source of imposter feelings. We do have to look at societal factors. You know, if you're the first, the few, or the only person who looks like you, and you've got kind of pressure to represent your entire group, and you're on the receiving end of stereotypes about competence or intelligence, whether it's based on age, class, gender, race, disability, language, those are all very important factors. And I think we need to do more contextualizing and less personalizing. At the same time, I don't think it is the only source. Managers do need to become imposter syndrome informed, but a lot of leaders themselves also experience imposter feelings. So I think we can make a lot of interventions in organizations. There's a lot of movement around this concept of psychological safety, which Amy Edmondson, I'm not sure, pioneered. So people feel comfortable speaking up in a meeting, saying, I don't understand, innovating, sharing ideas. To me, the missing link there is, yeah, you can make all these organizational changes you want, but if internally my understanding of what it means to be competent is, you know, perfection. It's knowing 150%. It's never needing any help. It's excelling in multiple roles simultaneously, doing things effortlessly and easily. It doesn't matter what the organization does. I'm going to operate out of that misunderstanding of what it means to be competent.
That so sounds like it's both.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for this. It's one of those things I think that's just can be insidious and sneaky in our lives. And I know that you spent most of your career studying it. So I appreciate your time. And is there anything you wanted to circle back to before we close up in order to feel complete, underscore, say something new?
You know, I think I would. And I think what I find, Andrea, is what everybody wants is to stop feeling like an imposter, right? Mm-hmm. They want to read a book and at the end, like, oh, okay, done, got that, you know, or go to a workshop or a talk and walk in feeling like an imposter and leave not feeling like an
imposter. Check off the box. Yeah.
Right. And that's not how it works. The feelings are the last change. So my really mantra is the only way to stop feeling like an imposter is to stop thinking like an imposter. So change your thoughts first to think like a humble realist, then act like you believe the new thoughts, even though you don't, but act like you believe them. And over time, the feelings will change and the confidence will catch up.
I love that. One of the things I do is kind of just like last note for people listening that might be helpful. And I wrote about this, I think, in my third book. When I'm having imposter feeling thoughts and just like, maybe I shouldn't do that, or I'm definitely not qualified for that, I love the character Cha-Cha de Gregorio from the movie Grease. She has such a small part, but the confidence that woman has is off the charts. Like, it's more symbolic than anything. And I ask myself, what would Cha-Cha do? Like, she would definitely go for it. And like, it wouldn't even be a second thought. So, you know, whoever that person is, that whether it's a character, alter ego, What would Dr. Valerie Young do? What would Lady Gaga do?
Michelle Obama do? What would, you know,
Billie Jean King?
Do?
Yeah, whoever. Exactly. Well, where can people go to, you know, we'll put the link to your book and your website in the show notes, but where would you like people to go to learn more about you or your work?
You know, they can just go to impostersyndrome.com. I've had that domain since 1995.
So. Oh my gosh, forever. Oh, that was like the beginning of the internet.
It was the World Wide Web. Yeah.
www.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Again, everyone, we'll have that link in the show notes. Thank you for joining me and my guests. I appreciate all of you so much. And remember, it's our life's journey to make ourselves better humans and our life's responsibility to make the world a better place. Bye for now. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. I would be so incredibly grateful if you haven't done so already, if you could leave a review of this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Super easy if you already listen to your shows over there. But if you don't, or maybe you have the app on your phone, but you listen to the show on a different app, if you could leave a review for this show, it matters so much. I wish I could express how much it matters. I also wish that it didn't matter so much, but alas, it does. So if you haven't already, please go review and rate the show. It would mean so much to me. And thank you so much. I hope you have an amazing day.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.